ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Vamana Dwadashi, right? Today is the appearance day of Lord Vamanadeva, the dwarf incarnation. I'll read a little bit from Srimad Bhagavatam, maybe we can discuss also. This is chapter 18 of the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam. I'll read the verse 1. Or we can chant verse 1. Shri Shuka Uvacha, Itam Vidincha Stutta Karma Virya, Padur Babuv Amrita Bhur Aditya, Chatur Bhujak Shankar Dada Bhuja Chakra, Pishanga Vasa Nalina Yatikshanaha Shishuka Uvacha Itam Vidincha Stuta Karma Viryak Pradur Babu Vamrita Bhur Aditya Chatur Bhujat Shankar Gadabja Chakra Dishamba Vasa Nalinaya Tikshanaha Here's the book. Shishuka Uvacha Itam Vidincha Stuta Karma Virya Padur Babu Vamrita Bhur Adityam Chatur Bhuja Gajab Gadab Chakraha Vishanga Vasa Nalata Naya Tikshanaha Shishuka Uvacha Shishuka Uvacha Shri Shukadeva Goswami said Itam in this way Vidincha Stutta Karma Viryaha the personality of Godhead whose activities and prowess are always praised by Lord Brahma Pradur Babuva became manifested. Amitabhu, whose appearance is always deathless. Aditya, from the womb of Aditi. Chatupujaha, having four arms. Shankagada Abja Chakraha Decorated with conch shell, club, lotus, and disc. Pishangavasa
Dressed in yellow garments.
Nalina Ayata Ikshanaha Having blooming eyes like the petals of a lotus. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami said, after Lord Brahma had thus spoken, glorifying the Supreme Lord's activities and prowess, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never subject to death like an ordinary living being, appeared from the womb of Aditi. His four hands were decorated with a conch shell, club, lotus, and disc. He was dressed in yellow garments, and his eyes appeared like the petals of a blooming lotus. Purport. The word Amitabhu is significant in this verse. The Lord sometimes appears like an ordinary child taking birth, but this does not mean that he is subject to birth, death, or old age. One must be very intelligent to understand the appearance and activities of the Supreme Lord in his incarnations. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma cha me divyam, evam yoveti tatvataha. One should try to understand that the Lord's appearance and disappearance and his activities are all divyam, or transcendental. The Lord has nothing to do with material activities. One who understands the appearance, disappearance, and activities of the Lord is immediately liberated. After giving up his body, he never again has to accept a material body, but is transferred to the spiritual world. Tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti surjuna. As Brahma prayed to Krishna, glorifying his appearances, and in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, one thing he said was, Swecha mayasya nata bhutcha mayasya kopi. Your appearances are not anything material. As ordinary people appear in this world, impelled by their piety and sin, by their karma, they are involuntarily taking births that they don't even choose for themselves. They don't even know beforehand what birth they're going to get. That's decided by higher authorities. But Krishna's appearance is swaicha maya, voluntary, swaicha maya, according to what looks like it says his own desire, swaicha. But I think it's Jiva Goswami who explains his understanding of swaicha, the desire of his devotees. Is it? But I might also be Krama Sundarbha. Swaicha, the desire of his devotees. Swa can mean his men.
Swajana icha,
yeah. And swa, like swa and bandhavas, your family and friends, your people. Or it can be a reflexive pronoun, yourself. But we assume it's yourself, but our commentator, Srila Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, they say his own devotees. In other words, Krishna has no purpose of his own to come here. His desire, if he had his desire, he probably wouldn't come to this lousy world at all. But he wants to take care of his devotees. He wants to please them and gratify them and enlighten them, because they're being harassed by the material energy, by the powers of ignorance and confusion, envy, greed, lust, and he wants to protect his devotees. Parichranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam. In order to save his devotees and kill the demons. Kill the demons and save the devotees are listed as two separate purposes. So saving the devotees doesn't just mean killing demons. Otherwise, why would it be listed separately if it's the same thing? No, saving the devotees is something else. Devotees don't have to be saved from demons by Krishna coming personally to kill those demons. Krishna can make easier arrangements. Who was it? Hamayun? The father of Akbar. Not that he was a great demon, but he was a Muslim. So Krishna arranged to kill him. He didn't have to come in his forearms and cut off his head. He was up in his Chandrashala looking at the stars, and then he fell down the stairs and died. Yeah. Great, great conqueror and emperor of the Mughal Empire. Fell down the stairs and died. So Krishna could have arranged for Kamsa to fall down the stairs. Actually, Kamsa did die by falling down, and then out of fright, he tripped and he was dead before when he hit the ground. He was dead already. So Krishna didn't even have to come. Kamsa could have just tripped on the stage, and that would have been the end of him anyway. Krishna doesn't have to personally come to kill his opponents. He's got the whole material energy and all of its agents on his side. Krishna can arrange to kill, whole populations at a time without lifting a finger, without moving one inch from his original abode. So that's not the Paricharnaya Sadhvanam. The devotees are suffering not so much that they're afraid the demons will destroy them. If Devaki and Vasudeva were actually that much afraid of Kamsa, why did they stay in town? Why didn't they run away like a lot of the other Vrishnis? Hide in the caves, the mountains, and go to some other country. Why didn't they go to Gokula and take shelter with their friend Nanda Maharaj? Why'd they stay in town? Because they were confident that Krishna would protect them. Even after Kamsa killed the other seven children, they didn't run away. You know, there were intimate periods where Kamsa let them out of prison. They could have run away. They didn't, because they were perfectly confident that Krishna would protect them. They were not actually afraid of Kamsa. A devotee doesn't suffer. A pure devotee doesn't suffer. Devaki, despite having six of her children killed, she was not lamenting in a material way. What other mother in this world could tolerate the death of six of her sons and not curse God for it? Similarly, Rukmini lost her son. For all extents and purposes, Pradyumna was dead and gone. She didn't see him again, didn't have any clue of what happened to him until he reappeared when he was fully grown. And when he was 10 days old, he was kidnapped, and he didn't show up again until he was an adult. And still, she didn't lose her Krishna consciousness. She didn't become dragged down into material lamentation. So devotees don't suffer. They are confident that Krishna will protect them in all conditions, and there's nothing any demon or any demoniac force can do to them. It's to deliver the devotees means what they're really suffering from is separation from Krishna. So Krishna appears to deliver them from that pain of separation, to give them his association. That's to save his pure devotees. And for the neophyte devotees, Krishna has to appear in this world, maybe not personally to them, but he has to appear historically, so that sages like Vyasadeva and Shukadeva record his appearances. Sri Suta Goswami, speaking to Puranas, is talking about so many various appearances of the Lord. Here in the Bhagavatam, Shukadeva is describing many of the avatars. Here, Vamanadeva in the last chapters of the 8th canto. And in the very last chapter, chapter 24, is the description of the appearance of Matsyadeva. So he does that. The Lord makes those appearances also for the benefit of the less perfect devotees, so that they can be enlightened about the true nature of God. If we understand the janma and the karma of Krishna in the proper way, then we're freed from our material entanglement. We can go back to Godhead. That's all we need to understand, is Krishna's appearances, the special way in which he takes his birth and acts in this world. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tatvataha. If you simply understand evam and the way it actually is, not some materialistic speculator's idea about God's appearance, some speculative philosopher's idea, but the authorized idea presented by the sages like Vyasadeva and his disciples. We understand properly the way Krishna wants us to understand it, the transcendental nature of his birth and appearance. Then, chaktva deham, when we leave this body, we will not have to take another body, but we will go to Krishna somewhere where he's performing his pastimes. That's saving his devotees. Saves his pure devotees by giving them his association and letting them participate in his leelas on this earth and on other planets in the material world. And he saves the new devotees, the sadhakas, by revealing himself. If God did not reveal himself in this world, we would be left to guess, to speculate about what is God. But when God shows himself, and when that appearance is recorded in the authorized shastras by the great sages, then we have proper information about what is the janma and the karma of God. Mundane person cannot tell you. He's not a devotee. He's not a pure devotee. He cannot tell you how Krishna takes his birth and appearance. What he tells you is invalid. He's not authorized. He's not empowered to understand properly, so he cannot tell you. Only the person who is the pure devotee can tell, can inform you, enlighten you. Krishna empowers his devotees, his recognized devotees, to explain him to others. So here, Shukadev Goswami is explaining to us the wonderful appearance of Lord Vamanadeva for the benefit of his loving mother, Aditi. Don't think that Aditi is a material woman. Sounds like she was envious of, what was it, Bali Maharaj, who usurped the kingdom in this case? Yes. And she wanted her sons back in their kingdom. That sounds like mundane politics. You know, the Empress Dowager behind the scenes manipulating the affairs of state. But she's not just the mundane Empress Dowager, Dowager Empress. She's a transcendental personality. She has earned the right to become the mother of God. The same Aditi will later take birth as Devaki. And her husband is not an ordinary person. He's Vasudeva. Or at least Vasudeva and Devaki appear in the heavenly planets as Kashyap and Aditi. They're the expansions of the original Vasudeva and Devaki who live in the Mathura Dwarka of Vaikuntha. Or above Vaikuntha. Goloka, Mathura, Dwarka. There, the original Vasudeva and Devaki reside eternally. And they have their incarnations. This is explained by Sanatana Goswami in the Lago Bhagavatamrita, that devotees live in the Goloka, in Vrindavan, Mathura, or Dwarka, and they have their expansions in the material world, in the heavenly planets, and on the earth. So Devaki and Vasudeva are expanded in the material world as Kashyapa and Aditi, who have been around since almost the beginning of creation. Kashyapa is the son of he's not one of the original, right? But he's one of their sons. He's not one of the mental sons, but he's second generation. Anyway, that means he goes back almost to the beginning of the creation. Similarly, Aditi is the daughter of, is one of the daughters of I guess Prajapati Daksha? Dakshas. So anyway, they're very ancient personalities. They go back not just this Manvantara, back to the beginning of the creation. And they have now, but they're just expansions of the original Vasudeva and Devaki who live in Goloka. Then when Vasudeva and Devaki take birth on the earth, their expansions on Swargaloka and elsewhere, join them. They merge into their bodies when Devaki and Vasudeva appear on the earth. So Aditi is included within Devaki when she appears on earth. And sometimes some authorities say that Devaki is an incarnation of Aditi. Or even Garga Muni Krishna himself on his birthday told his mother that you were Aditi in your previous life. And before that you were Krishni. And I was your son twice before. This is the third time. But that's understood that the Aditi is expansion of Devaki, and Devaki is the original. Anyway, so the Aditi is not an ordinary woman. She's a direct expansion of Krishna's mother in Mathura. And he becomes Krishna's mother in two other incarnations, at least. And you can see that although she manifested what looked like material emotions of rivalry and favoritism toward her sons, she's actually better than that. She's a very great pure devotee, and she deserves to become the mother of Vamanadeva. So I'll just read some of the further description here. I'll read the English. What Brahmadev looked like when he appeared. Apparently, he appeared not as an infant, but with a conch shell, club lotus, in yellow garments, dressed. Appeared from the womb, and he was dressed up, and he had his forearms and his weapons. He didn't appear as an ordinary infant. So the further description of his appearance is here. Translation. The body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, blackish in complexion. Not blackish. I'll cover it in the picture. But it says here blackish. Shyamavadatta. Okay. In complexion, was free from all inebrieties. Pictures of Vamanadeva don't show him as golden color. Anyway, maybe he was born black. Yeah. Let's see. Blackish in complexion, was free from all inebrieties. His lotus face, decorated with earrings, resembled sharks. Appeared very beautiful, and on his bosom was the mark of Sri Vatsa. He wore bangles on his wrists, armlets on his arms, a helmet on his head, a belt on his waist, a sacred thread across his chest, and ankle bells decorating his lotus feet. An uncommonly beautiful flower, a garland of flowers, decorated his bosom, and because the flowers were extremely fragrant, a large group of bees, making their natural humming sounds, invaded them for honey. When the Lord appeared, wearing the Kasturva gem on his neck, his effulgence vanquished the darkness in the home of Prajapati Kashyapa. At that time there was happiness in all directions. In the reservoirs of water like the rivers and the oceans, and in the core of everyone's heart, the various seasons displayed their respective qualities, and all living entities in the upper planetary systems in outer space and on the surface of the earth were jubilant. The demigods, the cows, the brahmanas, and the hills and mountains were all filled with joy. On the day of Shravana Dwadashi, the 12th day of the bright fortnight in the month of Bhadra, it's still Bhadra now, okay, when the moon came into the lunar mansion Shravana. Okay. I wonder if it's in Shravana now.
Yeah, the moon is bright.
Bright, okay. That must mean it's in Shravana. At the auspicious moment of Abhijit, the Lord appeared in this universe. Considering the Lord's appearance, very auspicious, all the stars and planets, from the sun to Saturn, were munificently charitable. O King, when the Lord appeared on Dwadashi, the 12th day of the moon, the sun was at the meridian. He appears at noon. As every learned scholar knows, this Dwadashi is called Vijaya Dwadashi. Conch shells, kettle drums, drums, panavas, and anakas vibrated in concert. You have to arrange that. At noon. Concert. Have a concert at noon. The sound of these and various other instruments was tumultuous. Being very pleased, the celestial dancing girls, Apsaras, danced in jubilation. We can get some of the Babaji's come over and dance. Yes, I will. I'll invite him. The best of the Gandharvas sang songs, and the great sages, demigods, Manus, Pittas, and fire gods offered prayers to satisfy the Lord. The Siddhas, Vidyadharas, Kimpurushas, Kinnaras, Charanas, Yakshas, Rakshasas, Suparnas, birds, the best of serpents, and the followers of the demigods all showered flowers on Aditi's residence, covering the entire house while glorifying and praising the Lord and dancing. When Aditi saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead who had appeared from her own womb, having accepted a transcendental body by his own spiritual potency, she was struck with wonder and was very happy. Upon seeing the child, Prajapati Kashyapa exclaimed, "Jai, Jai," in great happiness and wonder. The Lord appeared in his original form with ornaments and weapons in his hands. Although this ever-existing form is not visible in the material world, he nonetheless appeared in this form. Then in the presence... he did appear as Vishnu, dark blue complexion. Then in the presence of his father and mother, he assumed the form of Vamana, a Brahmin dwarf, a brahmachari, just like a theatrical actor. Okay, it's a role. Think of a brahmachari as a little fat boy. In Bengali, they call the Brahmin as Bamana. Yeah, which is a pun. It means a dwarf. Yeah. Baman. When the great sages saw the Lord as the brahmachari dwarf, Vamana, they were certainly very pleased. Thus they placed before them Kashyapa Muni, the Prajapati, and performed all the ritualistic ceremonies, such as the birthday ceremony. At the sacred ceremony of Vamanadeva, I don't know if they did the sacred ceremony the same day, I don't know, maybe. Immediately, they gave him Upanayana. At the sacred thread ceremony, what are you going to do? He's appeared immediately as a brahmachari. Brahmachari's got to have Upanayana. He can't be a brahmachari without Upanayana. At the sacred thread ceremony of Vamanadeva, the sun god personally uttered the Gayatri mantra. Brihaspati offered the sacred thread, and Kashyapa Muni offered a straw belt. Munja. Mother Earth gave him a deerskin, and the demigod of the moon, who is the king of the forest, gave him a Brahmadanda, the rod of a brahmachari. His mother Aditi gave him cloth for underwear, and the deity presiding over the heavenly kingdom offered him an umbrella. O King, Lord Brahma offered a water pot to the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead. The seven sages offered him kusha grass, and Mother Saraswati gave him a string of Rudraksha beads. When Vamanadeva had thus been given the sacred thread, Kubera, king of Yakshas, gave him a pot for begging alms, and Mother Bhagavati, the wife of Lord Shiva, and most chaste mother of the entire universe, gave him his first alms. Rather than his mother, his natural mother, it was the mother of the universe, Parvati, who gave him. Usually the brahmachari is supposed to beg from his mother first, because he might be shy to go to the neighbors, so they get him warmed up for begging by first ask alms from his mother. But here it was Mother Parvati who gave him his first alms. Having thus been welcomed by everyone, Lord Vamanadeva, the best of brahmacharis, exhibited his Brahman effulgence. Thus he surpassed in beauty that entire assembly, which was filled with great saintly brahmanas.
Nice picture on the cover.
Yes. I'll read one more verse. After Lord Sri Vamanadeva set a sacrificial fire, he offered worship and performed a fire sacrifice on the sacrificial field. Here's Lord Vamanadeva on his birthday. It's initiation day. Hare Krishna. So there's several chapters describing how he went to the sacrifice of Bali and got back, by cheating, got back to the kingdom of Indra. Indra Bhagavatamrita, Indra complains that Vishnu appeared to win my kingdom back, but he had to resort to deceit. And I'm very ashamed of this, that he considers me so unimportant that he wouldn't even give a good fight to get the kingdom back, but he did it by deceit. But that's the Leela of, and Indra deserved it, sorry. That's the Leela of Vamanadeva. It's there in the rest of these chapters 18 through 20, 2 or 3 of the 8th canto. Anyone else have any comments? Questions?
This is related. Upendra is also related to Govardhan Leela too, because at that time Indra also called him Upendra.
Yes.
He said, "You're the king of the cows, Upendra."
Yes. But Upendra means secondary Indra.
Secondary, or it could mean...
It means the younger brother of Indra.
Or it could mean he who's
above Indra?
Minor to Indra.
Yes.
Or it could be somebody who's above Indra also.
Yeah, I guess it could mean... Upari, yeah. Relative to whom Indra is minor. Yeah.
I think Lahu Bhagavatamritam, I think, clarifies this matter with regard to that specific section, that verse of the Vishnu Purana, Brahma Purana, all the others.
Yes.
Where it's described.
And Vamana's pastimes are described in at least half of the Puranas. Very famous, very well-described pastimes. Of course, the different versions and the different Puranas don't all come out the same, because Vamanadeva appears in every Manvantara. He's one of the most frequent incarnations also. Every Manvantara, there's an appearance of Vamanadeva. So, they're not all going to perform exactly the same pastimes. And the other participants of his pastimes, Bali and his parents, are not always going to be the same people.
If we judge a person's character or his intention or his desire by what he does instead of what he says, then it would seem that Krishna prefers to take the role of Vamana more than he prefers to take the role of Krishna, because he comes as Krishna less.
That he does it more often means he prefers it?
That it would seem that way.
Well, but sometimes people are under obligation to do something a lot that they don't want to do, like go to work every day. So Krishna, not because he has his own obligations, but because he's got devotees who've got obligations and he's trying to help them out, he appears to help the demigods. So Vamana is appearing to help Indra. He's also included as Manvantara avatar. He particularly appears as he appears every Manvantara, but he appears as the Manvantara avatar in our current Manvantara. So he comes in. Manvantara avatars come to help Indra. They're accepting an obligation on behalf of their devotees. So someone under obligation has to go to work every day. You know, so Vamanadeva, every Manvantara has to show up at work. But just because it's more frequent, it's not what he prefers to do necessarily.
Yeah,
I get to take a vacation 2 weeks of the year, but that's what I like to do. But he accepts for his devotees. He accepts obligations
for
his devotees.
Even for the Sakama bhaktas?
Yes.
He's
so obliging.
He
needs to come for the demigods. They're in trouble most of the time. They need help. Krishna is the most famous. His fame could easily extend from one day of Brahma to the next. Ramachandra is the next most famous. We remember him from 2 million years ago. No problem. Lots of people remember Ramachandra. Lots of people.
Krishna and Ram, they're most famous even though they come less frequently.
Yes, because their fame is so powerful. They don't have to come so frequently. Otherwise, it'd be overdose. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, you know, they can accomplish enough business to keep the universe running for another day of Brahma in one show. Krishna can appear once in a day of Brahma and establish his fame and establish the Bhagavad Gita and get rid of the terrible demons. He doesn't have to come back so often. You know, and if you got something that breaks every other day, you got to bring the mystery constantly. But you know, if you buy something that never breaks, then a repairman never has to come. So when Krishna fixes something, it doesn't break again. And the third and fourth most famous avatars are Vamanadeva and Narasimha. Third in order, or fourth. Maybe the third and fourth sort of tied.
It seems like also Varahadeva was very, very popular in this part of the country at one time.
Yes, he may be fifth. He's a runner-up. But it's called Paravasta, the Lord's most important appearances. And they're counted by Sanatana Goswami identifies them, Rupa Goswami rather, in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, identifies these four as the Paravasta, the topmost, the most famous, and the most fully manifest, and the ones who manifest the Lord's opulence most completely are these four: Krishna, Ramachandra, Vamana, and Narasimha. Then, you know, Vamanadeva is a close runner-up. Varahadeva.
Is that why we generally celebrate these appearance days more than, say, Purnima or Matsya or Shravan, etc.?
Well, I mean, the observance is similar. I mean, we fast till noon, and we don't even do. Okay, no rules.
I've never heard.
Who?
Korma.
Yeah, it may not even be on the calendar. It may be that the day is not known.
I had another question.
Yeah.
So in Vaikrishna, we have Nanda and Yashoda, the same couple in Mathura, Dwarka would be Vasudeva and Devaki.
Nanda and Yashoda?
Yeah.
They're not the same.
Sorry?
They're the same people?
Well, I'm talking about...
They're counterparts.
Counterparts.
Yeah. Okay.
And then in Vaikuntha we have Krishna Sutta. In this world we have, in the Svarga region we have Kashyapa and Aditi.
But the Kashyapa, Krishna and Aditi are direct expansions of Devaki. Yashoda is a separate person. Mm-hmm. She has her expansion in the heavenly planet. There's Drona and what's her name?
Dura.
They're the expansions of Yashoda and the original Yashoda and Nanda in Goloka Vrindavan. They have their
heavenly
glance. And then they join Nanda and Yashoda on the earth. And then sometimes it's said that Yashoda is an incarnation of Dura, but actually Dura is her expansion that joins her.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Like
but you know, Nanda and Vasudeva are two separate people.
So, do they have Pratirupas as well in this world? I was just reading
you
this.
You mean further expansions or deities?
Yeah, because Sanatana Goswami is mentioning that the Lord has expansions which he calls avatars, it seems.
Yes, and so the devotees can also expand, not as
expand.
Much as the Lord does. The Lord expands unlimitedly.
Uh-huh.
Devotees can expand a few times.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in a few places at once in their expansions.
Mm-hmm.
The eternal associates of the Lord in Goloka, they expand several times,
mm-hmm.
but not infinite times or countless times like Vishnu himself.
Mm-hmm.
Narada appears in lots of places. Yeah, he's in Vaikuntha. Whenever you go to Vaikuntha, he's sitting there, and he's also wandering around the material world.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's another. Identified this also.
Well, there's some esoteric identity of Guru, but. I've only heard it from one devotee in Mayapur. I'm not sure where he got it. That he's Garuda's an expansion of one of the coward birds?
Sridhama. Because Sridhama usually
keeps
Krishna.
And Vyasadeva is an incarnation of
Vyasadeva
is an expansion of Madhu Mangala.
In Vrindavana
Kamala. Maybe.
There's a mention of Garuda and his expansion, but I just don't remember who.
Yeah. Yes. Not much discussion about this. This gets very esoteric,
mm-hmm.
and we could go crazy, you know, getting into it.
But I'm trying to understand the difference between what he's calling avatars and pratirupas. Pratirupas would seem to be like material representations of those persons in this world.
Well, because you know the Lord's avatar is his. He always appears in his spiritual body, same body, but maybe not fully manifesting all the aspects of his personality. But it's always a transcendental Vaikuntha form, even when he comes to the material world. But when devotees appear, when jivas appear, they take material bodies. So it is a material form, the pratirupa. It's like archavatar. It's the Lord appearing in a material body. It's like that. All the, what you might call incarnations of devotees, that word avatar is not used. Expansion, amsha. And then you say pratirupa. Pratirupa in the sense it's a material manifestation. And that's what it is. But, you know, devotee always takes a material body when he comes to the material world.
The deity, the spiritual master, and Tulsi, these are all appear to be material forms, and yet they're not.
Right, but the body of we don't think that the body of the spiritual master is of the same, you know, it is a material body. Unless your guru happens to be a direct, you know, swamsha incarnation,
yes.
You know, but most spiritual masters are jivas,
mm-hmm.
and jivas when they appear in the material world, they don't bring their Vaikuntha body with them. They pick up material bodies when they enter the world. You know, Lord Vishnu travels here with his original body, But his servants, the devotees, the jivas, they leave their Vaikuntha bodies in Vaikuntha, and they pick up material bodies when they come here.
How does this work, say, with descendants of Lord Nityananda or Advaita, for example?
Some of those descendants of the Lord of Nityananda and Advaita and other devotees of Lord Chaitanya who were Vishnu Tattva, if you got to go, you can go and breakfast. Yeah. You're free. Some of the descendants are also Vishnu Tattva. Yeah.
Seems like if, for a few generations then.
Only some. I mean, not all the direct sons of Nityananda or Advaita were Vishnu Tattva, not all of them, right? So even in the first generation, not all are Vishnu.
That's right.
And not only some of the original associates of Lord Chaitanya are Vishnu Tattva, a few. You know, the Lord can appear wherever and whenever he wants to, wherever and whenever he wants. But very often, his devotees are appearing as his associates and his representatives, jivas. So there's a difference where we can't, you know, we may not always know who's who, who's what.
Yeah, it's a troublesome question with regard to these caste swamis, because they're claiming descent from Lord Nityananda. And, you know, theologically, you can extrapolate like this, you know, that there are some special category of some sort.
But that's bad theology.
Yeah.
To assume that you're perfect, that you're an incarnation, just by being in the bloodline of Lord Nityananda. Because we know, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami makes a very strong point, goes out of his way to tell us, that three of the sons of Advaita Acharya became nonsense, became rejected. They were not only not incarnations, they were an even perfect devotees. They fell down and they became Mahabodhis. So even to be directly the son, what to speak of 12 generations later? Just because you're born in that vamsha doesn't automatically qualify you, as certainly not as an avatar, not even as an acharya.
Yeah,
you can't claim that you're an acharya just because of your birth.
That's not really so much the question that I'm having. The question I'm wondering about is, what is it that distinguishes the spiritual body of the Lord? At what point does that bloodline become material?
If Krishna had lots of sons,
yeah.
I don't think all of them were not Vishnu.
Right.
And the ones that weren't Vishnu, they had material bodies.
Mm.
Even though they're Krishna's direct son. Mm. So, whatever point that body, there's a jiva in that body, it's not a spiritual body anymore.
Mm. Yeah, I'm gonna call this a chintu sharpie for now.
Yeah. Krishna can directly give birth to a material body of a jiva. He did it in the form of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu when he manifested Brahma out of his navel. And Krishna can do that in his original form. And all his avatars can do that too. Including, Lord Nityananda and Advaita. They can even have Maya bodies for some.
For him, matter and spirit are the same.
Yeah, he can produce matter.
Turn it one way or the other if you like.
Yeah. You can. You can produce material energy just as easy as spiritual. Anything else? Yeah.
What is the meaning of this term pratirupa that
What does it actually mean?
Well, I just was introduced to it yesterday when I was reading it in one of the purports.
Oh.
That, he's using it, it seems to He says that both the Lord and his expansions have, both the Lord and his devotees, that is to say, have expansions in Vaikuntha, which it seems like he's calling avatar.
Yeah,
Both categories, the Sramsha and the Vibhinamsha.
Yes.
And then he says that when they have their manifestations in the pure world, and he gives the examples of, Mahalakshmi and Saraswati and demigods, then even though they're representing the Lord in some degree, they're called pratirupas.
Yeah, I don't think all of them. The Lord can appear in his swamsha form and in the material world.
Certainly.
And same thing with his consort.
Yeah.
But Mahalakshmi is material.
That's right.
Yeah. The one that the Dukanwalas worship. She's material.
Like Ganesh.
Yeah. Yeah. The original Lakshmi doesn't sit on top of your cash register.
But I guess Pratyarupa in the sense that, you know, facsimile.
Yes, that's it, yeah. Facsimile. Material form?
Good translation from Pratyarupa? Facsimile?
You can say material facsimile.
Yeah, better yet. Anyway, I'm not sure I grasp it. Really, it's one of my questions on that.
It's
the commentaries of Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, Bhagavad Gita, third part.
Chapter 6.
Yeah, Narada's last instructions to Gopakumara before Gopakumara goes off to Goloka.
Yeah.
It's what you have to know to get into Goloka. To get into Goloka Vrindavan. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.